Thank you for having us. I appreciate listening from North Bergen. Good evening there, and to OBS.
You're quite welcome.
Over here, well, in Asheville, North Carolina, they would have the bottom of the barrel on Asheville, North Carolina, the Mount Mitchell roof here. It was a really good one that day, around midnight would come on. So it's good to hear that amateur radio is still actively alive. And to OBS Mobile.
Yeah, it's alive and well. We used to run until past midnight, but as time went on, we kind of shortened it a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a nocturnal person, so this would almost dare be my bottom of the barrel. This is Keith down here. I'm on, give me some hot dogs in the middle before midnight. So it's the hot dog net.
Yeah, I mean, in the real old days, they would keep the repeaters live throughout the night, and we had a couple of guys who had apparently problems sleeping. It's, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. You would hear some of the most interesting conversations if you didn't want to actually sleep the night away.
I remember in the 90s, I remember when they used to shut down. There was a lot more two-meter repeaters. They would shut them down, but someone would automatically give notification, say, you know, repeater is going down at midnight in 15 minutes. And it was not really a person doing it, but it was a vocal, you know, recording. And, you know, but that, you know, I'm back up here, so I'm 4 years and going. And it's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. It's good. I'm glad to hear the repeaters are still active. That's important.
Yeah, there aren't many. Unfortunately, you know, auto patch was the prime time for repeaters, and since the cell phones took that place, you know, repeaters have been fading away. But Limark has one of the few really active repeaters in the metropolitan area.
Yeah, copy. 85, the Metroplex over here, 45. I remember the repeater they have, we have over on the World Trade Center, Jersey City, Bayonne. Yeah. Oh, let me focus on my attention, sir. Good evening there to you. Or good morning. Another 20 minutes or so.
Okay, good evening. Have a safe trip. 73. This is AC2GS, and I'm clear.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
K2KNB, good morning, Rich. How you doing? It's K2DOY.
Morning, Greg. So, I think we'll have another nice day today, and then I think we're due for a drop in temperature and some rain. So, at least your drive today should be pretty good.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be a nice day today. I'll deal with the rain on Wednesday. but I'm looking forward to some of the cooler weather, so that's okay.
Yeah, with my age, I don't do well with cold weather. Even during the summer, it was kind of crazy. Because, as you mentioned, it wasn't the greatest of swimming summers, but even at 80 degrees, I wasn't comfortable. I mean, I could get in the pool and stay in there, but I just wasn't comfortable. But it seemed like 83 degrees and I was fine. So, I don't know. That could be a major expense next year.
Yeah, I've heard that as we age, we become more sensitive to the cold. And oddly, less sensitive to heat, to the point where I think it can become detrimental, because people don't feel the heat as much. They tend to overexert themselves in the heat and, that causes them to have heat stroke and whatnot. So just be careful.
I've had, I think, diagnosed as Raynaud syndrome or sometime where the extremities, I guess it's circulatory, I'm not sure. So my fingers will tend to be cold. Sometimes that translates into my hands. And then on top of that, you have a thinning of the skin, I think. But on top of that, I have a slow heart rate. So the blood that would normally warm you just isn't getting out there. So it's just, it's obviously gotten worse over the last couple of years. But I was saying to someone the other day, I remember when my mother was alive, she and my stepfather would have the temperature in their house, the thermostat set in the 80s. You know, we'd walk in as a younger couple, my wife and I and the kids, and it was like a semi steam bath in there. And then... very hard to get that moisture smell out of the house, but you know when you walk into a house in which the temperature's been up, you just smell it and everything. And I said, it's like the ad on television, we don't want you to be like your parents, or we can't stop you from being like your parents. Then I would turn the heat up to 78 degrees, 80 degrees, just to be comfortable in the wintertime. And we'll have to see how it goes this year.
Yeah, the progressive commercials, right? Yeah, I know what you mean, though. I've a couple of relatives and an uncle that would do the same thing. And it's interesting because, you know, the house that he had steam heat. So when it did get up that hot, it was a little steamy, like you said. You know, the homes today, they're forced hot air or baseboard heat. And I think it's different. It dries out the house. It's kind of interesting. But, I know, from my perspective, as I've gotten a little older, I do feel the cold a little more. But I still do like it. So I'm willing to put on an extra sweater or an extra sweatshirt as I'm sitting around the house and not moving around much. But yeah, you know, you gotta stay warm. So.
KTKND. Yeah, I doubt, you know, that at my age we're ever going to move to another location, but I would never do forced air again in a cold environment. Probably different in Florida, living there all year round, but up here, it is dry. It's very difficult to get enough moisture in the air. It's almost self-defeating because you're pumping moisture into the system down at the plenum, and it tends to evaporate pretty quickly. One of the things that they will suggest is water at the vent, but that's also a pain. So yeah, it's very dry, and you know, the selling point was always that you walk into the house and instantaneously, not instantaneous, but very quickly, the heat is up and you're warm, but there's no retention. You know, it's not on long enough to heat the wood and heat the chairs and heat the floor. And so I mean, we're here a long time, we're here over 50 years, but I would never do that again. Greg?
KEQDOY. I have to just say, Rich, you've got a young voice, so I don't know your actual age, but, you know, you sound like a spry young chicken. I've been in a couple of different, lived in a few homes, most of them have had forced hot air, and it's okay. It does have its problems. I guess, you know, what would be nice would be radiant heating, you know, in the floor. You know, that's kind of cool. But I'm not going to, I can't afford that, and I'm not going to end up going moving again. So I'll live with what I got. It is what it is, right?
Yeah, I'm actually 81. When we did the kitchen back in the late 70s, we did it. You know, everything was opened up, and I was thinking, should we do a radiant heat down there? We could have done it, you know, because eventually you redo the floor, and it's tiled and everything else, and it's colder because it's tiled. And I've been in houses with the radiant heating, and it's really nice. And then we closed off our kitchen a little bit, and there's only one small vent pipe that's actually supplying heat to the kitchen area, so that makes it a little uncomfortable also. And we switched to gas in the late 90s. That turned out to be a real godsend at that time because gas was so much cheaper than oil. And then with various times when it was difficult to get oil deliveries, we never had to worry about that. So certain things worked out well. But again, that forced air, you know, pumping air through a split level and then expanding it. Trying to think what we did. Oh, we converted the garage into a bedroom, so we had to throw a little extra heat in there. And I think that installation was done improperly. They didn't put a damper, and it's very difficult to put a damper to retrofit it. That one room is very hot because it's closer to the It's closer to the furnace. It's closer to the service line, return line, return line. No, service line. But in any event, I just found that this kind of heat, again, for the age, is just really difficult.
Yeah, I understand that, and I tend to agree with you. My wife's sister, her husband, they live out in Shelter Island, and he was in construction, so he just built himself a new house, and everything is that radiant heat, and he has some health problems, and so you know, he definitely is affected by the dry air and whatnot. So it's all radiant heat, and it's really nice. What I find odd about it, though, is that you know, the house is not like comfortably warm. You know, it's just your feet are a little warm, and therefore you kind of feel comfortable or warm. But it's still like, at least maybe he keeps it too cool. But I always feel like there's a slight chill in the air, and so I kind of, I don't know what that's about. And then the sort of the romantic in me, I always like a fireplace. I know they're not the most efficient thing, but a wood-burning stove, a fireplace, something like that. I enjoy the sound of a crackling fire. No, it's not so good for the environment, but it certainly sounds nice.
Yeah, my nephew, during one of the times when oil prices went skyrocketing, put in one of those pellet furnaces, and it was economical. It was a pain in the neck. He had to buy a pallet or two at the same time and throw it into the shed and worry about, you know, whether it would get moisture in it or anything. But it did tend to heat the whole house. I think the problem with any heating system, and air conditioning being the same, is the balance between the air as it sits in an 8-foot or 9-foot or 10-foot room. During the heating season, the vents are low, which means the heat is rising, and that's the goal of it, but it also means that as you're getting up, you actually will feel a little more heat higher up because so much of it is rising, and perhaps a little bit cooler down. And with the radiant, it's kind of the same thing. You know, you've got to find that balance, and that's why fans very often are very helpful in the heating season, pushing the air back down, I guess, is the way it does it. And in the, whichever way it is, you're probably pushing the air down, because you can reverse the fans, and right now the brain is fried, it's too early in the morning. But in one case, you want to be pushing the air down. The other one, you want to be pulling it up. Probably in the air conditioning, you want to be pulling it up because the cold air will sink. So it's a whole physics that you have to get into also. K2KND.
Yeah, I think you're right. It certainly is, you know, one of the biggest challenges is getting the warm air from the you know, where it currently is, and distributing it to the rest of the house. You know, and that's why they do say ceiling fans are a good thing to have, and you can run them in reverse during the winter to help keep the rooms more evenly heated. Speaking of you know, back in the I guess it was the 70s, the early 80s, the energy crisis. My father had went out and bought it was a wood burning stove. It was a Vermont Castings wood burning stove, and he installed it himself. He was always a very handy guy, and he did all the brickwork himself. He built a really nice bluestone hearth, and then brick. Sort of surround on the backside, and you know, so he put this in our living room in this tiny little ranch that we had, and you know, it was a nice stove. I wish we still had it, But he, you know, he did the whole thing himself. And with that stove, we could heat the whole house. I mean, without a problem. Down by the other end of the house where the thermostat was, it was reading 74 degrees without it really trying. And that was kind of nice. But then it was, like you said, it was work. You had to make sure you had the firewood. You had to have it split. You had to have it stacked someplace and kept dry. A bit kind of effort. So. But still, it was kind of cool. And as a kid growing up, you're like, oh, this is the best. You know, you come home and you had a nice fire going, you know, or if it was snowing outside, you'd come in and warm by the fire. So I miss that, but, you know, it is what it is. Over to you.
So I think this may be a little before your time, but it was during one of the oil embargoes that the price of oil had just skyrocketed. And everyone was into kerosene heaters. Kerosene was relatively inexpensive and very efficient. And I forget offhand, 1 gallon could have been most of the day, maybe 8 hours, 10, 12 hours, I forget offhand. And so there were a couple of heaters that were really extremely good. And I vaguely remember like 25,000 BTUs, I'm not sure. So we have a split with a cathedral ceiling, and we would put the unit in a position where it was reflecting off the cathedral ceiling, and it really did heat the whole house. The heat was rising with some speed. It would hit the ceiling and be reflected throughout the rest of the house. But the problem for us, for anybody, was twofold. Number one, you're heating the house by an external heater, so you do not leave that heater on at night. You know, nobody in their right mind would leave that kerosene heater on. It wasn't vented outside or anything. During the daytime, you'd open windows, but, you know, all that was fine, but you never leave it on at night. So now, because the thermostat had been heated by an external heater, the thermostat was reading like 85, 88, you know, something like that. There was nothing you could do about that. It took forever to get down to the point where the furnace would kick in. So you had all this beautiful heat during the daytime and a long delay before the furnace could kick on, and, you know, it actually would get cold in the middle of the night until the furnace kicked in. So that was one problem. Second problem was my cats loved the warmth, and unfortunately, they would do their thing on the heater. They just were there. They loved it, whatever. And we didn't always see it. You know, they would actually urinate on the base of the kerosene heater. And we'd light up the kerosene heater, and the smell was unbelievable.
Oh, boy. first of all, I do remember we had a kerosene heater. I think it was a brand called KeroSun. And I do remember going with my father to a place in Huntington, over at Huntington Station, and getting kerosene, you know, it was a weird old gas station of sorts, but they sold kerosene, and he did all the maintenance on the kerosene heater too. I remember him being outside in the cold winter air, cleaning it and replacing the wick and whatnot. But we had a kerosene heater, and I remember that one too. And yes, you're right, you didn't leave it on at night. But we didn't have cats, we had dogs, and didn't have any issues with urinating on the heater. That's gotta have really smelled. Oof. we've always had dogs, and to this day still have them. I don't mind cats, but they're not my thing. So, over to you, Rich.
Yeah, cats actually seem to have a sense when somebody doesn't like them. Something, you know, some pherons or whatever are given off. But, we've always had dogs and cats up until a few months back when we had to put the last cat down. So, that's after almost 58 years of having animals, we don't have any. And you know, that's changed our lives a little bit. I'm up early anyway, but I was getting up early because I was always the one taking care of the animals, feeding them in the morning, walking the dogs. So, you know, those conditions remained for a while. I think with the original kerosene heaters, some of them were really unsafe, and it was only when they became extremely popular and extremely important that they had a tip-over function, so that if the kerosene heater tipped over, there was an automatic shut-off. But I think some of the first ones that we had did not have that, and then it became a major function because everybody was using them. Kerosene was relatively inexpensive and, as I said, very, very efficient. I think kerosene is a lot more money now, proportional. But again, the efficiency of it and the fact that it heated the whole house for like a dollar a day. I mean, it was some ridiculous number. I remember one year with oil, and again, this goes back 40 years maybe even more. It was such a cold January that we actually ended up with 2.5 deliveries. I think it even could have been 3 deliveries in the month of January. And economically, boy, that was a disaster.
Yeah, I remember that tip-over function. It was like a guillotine that came across the wick and would put out the flame very quickly. Yeah, ours had that. So I remember that. And I remember winters when I was a kid growing up. Winters were much different. We had several ice storms. We had a couple of good blizzards where the town actually had to use a front-end loader to clear the streets. Things have definitely changed a bit. I think certainly our homes have become more efficient. We build differently now, and even the homes that were built in the 50s and 60s have been retrofitted with new windows and more insulation and whatnot, so hopefully it's better, but still, it's battling the elements and the cost of heating or cooling a home is quite crazy. So, KE2DOI, over to you, Rich.
KE2KND. I think when we moved out here in 73, I think oil was 17 cents a gallon, and gasoline to the car, I'm thinking, was 35 cents a gallon. And then we moved out here in March or April of 73, and then in October, there was the first Arab oil boycott, and we moved out on a shoestring. You know, we were to the penny, literally, on what it was going to cost us to live. And then suddenly you have this thing, and oil went up to, could have been 40, 45 cents a gallon, maybe even more. Gasoline jumped to 75 cents a gallon. And it was, it was really a tough time at that point. But